No, I... Absolutely.
I wouldn't have been there.
Oh.
When we flew out of Milwaukee on December 1st, the snowstorm that closed down the airport, and there was a plane that went out that was going to Disney, and they went out, and they tried to take off, and then they crashed. And they were on the plane an hour. That was horrible. Just...
Oh, on the minutes?
Yeah.
Yes.
ABD? All the... Working on it.
Kim Yang, you never know. Okay, I'm going to call the Finance and Operations Committee meeting to order February 19th, 2007. One of our members will be here shortly, I'm sure, but we could get started. I'd like a motion to approve the minutes dated January 22nd and January 24th. Maybe we do those separately.
Well, and then there's the
right,
second.
The other one is the joint.
Yeah. I move approval of the two meetings of the Finance and Operations on the 22nd and 24th.
Great. A second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Then next on the minutes for the joint meeting of the Finance and Operations and Long Range Planning Committee dated January 22nd, 2007.
I move approval. And I have one correction to make on that. It was a joint meeting of Finance and Operations and Long Range Planning, and Lucy Mathiak was absent at that one.
So we'll just make that correction. Oops. And I second that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. We've got a busy agenda. All right. We have one public appearance, Barbara Schrank.
Do you want her to come up here, or do you
want to... Yeah, why don't you come up and you can sit next to Art. Okay, hold on. I'm going to figure this thing out. All right. Good evening. I understand the seriousness of the budget situation facing the school district and the responsibilities the school board has this spring. I appreciate and value your hard work. As part of the budget process this year, next year, and subsequent years, activities and courses we value and are important to our children's education and the value of our schools in the Madison community will continue to be jeopardized by annual need to cut the budget to meet revenue caps. There are members of the community, and I am one of those, who are willing to work to keep value programs, such as the programs you'll be discussing tonight, and others. However, to be successful, such efforts need to be done in partnership with the school district. The board could help the community, first, by not taking big financial whacks out of one program or eliminating one program while keeping others. How might this be done? The school board could help by working with community members to develop a multi-year or multi-year financial plans for the long-term support of what is often called non-required but excellent programming the community values, which benefits children and children deserve. This may mean a funding plan that includes a mix of district funds and funds from an endowment, for example, which could be built over time, but it does take time and it does take your support. However, I think it is important to be equitable about how we go forward by not taking major chunks out of single courses or activities without thinking about the longer term. Careful transitions will help stabilize programs and build support for multi-year funding plans that may help us get to a better position for these programs. You might slide by cuts in athletics this year, but then what happens next year? Which sport runs the risk of getting picked off? Which fine arts class? I think there are other choices. As another example, the newly established Fine Arts Task Force, which I appreciate very much being put into place, could factor in plans for funding along with what programs and courses are valued. It would not make sense to build a grand fine arts education plan that is not grounded in financial reality of what the district can pay for and what may need to be provided through private funds in the future. I'm a member of that task force, and I hope this is what we're able to accomplish, because I think this is needed for this and a number of other areas in our schools, in our school district. A multi-year funding plan that takes us toward where we want to be and what is needed would greatly help, and I hope you will take that into consideration with athletics and other areas. School board support and leadership is important to this effort, because I sincerely believe to be successful, it's important for us to be working together, and I'm committed to helping that out. Thank you very much for listening.
Tammy. Thank you. Any questions? Do you have a question?
Well, it isn't exactly a question, just a comment. The Foundation for Madison Public Schools has been in existence since the year 2000, and it's been building its endowment for that number of years, and I believe is at about $3 million, $2 million.
It's between one and two, I believe, right. The actual endowment itself.
And when you have an endowment, you can count on using the income, or the income generated is about 5% of the endowment. And I just did some quick figuring, and my recollection is that the cut we made in strings was about $200,000 a couple of years ago. To have an endowment that would generate that much money a year would require us to raise $4 million for the endowment. I think that certainly involving the public in finding ways to finance programs is important, but I also think that we should not expect that kind of a process to really be able to replace what we have historically supported through taxpayer funds.
Lucy?
I guess I feel like I need to respond to that, in part because I spend a good deal of my time dealing with a number of issues related to development and stewardship of gift funds. And your point is well taken. It would take a substantial endowment. In fact, from the way I figure, unless the Fund for Madison Schools does it differently, that full 5% anticipated income is not all used. Some of that is plowed back in so that there are resources that are reinvested for inflation and other increases in costs over time. That said, when citizens come to us and say we want to be part of the solution, I don't think it behooves us to throw cold water on that. It is a huge job. But I also have seen many things done that people didn't believe were possible simply because a number of good people got together and said, let's see what we can do. I don't believe any miracles. I know how long it takes to build the relationships to get substantial or major gifts. But I also believe that it is time to embrace anybody who's willing to think outside of the traditional box, because right now all we have is either we spend tax money or we cut it. And for those of us who understand the roles of the arts and the extracurriculars in education, it's not enough to say either we cut it or we use taxpayer money. The fact is we don't have taxpayer money. And so I welcome Ms. Schrank and anybody else who wants to make that commitment to that long-term process of building an endowment you know, it's not easy. And even with what we have now in the Fund for Madison Schools, I know that a number of the funds are designated. They are not unrestricted, which means, for example, the gift that I made to East High School, and it is a substantial ongoing commitment long before I came onto the board, is designated. It goes to East High School and half goes to one part and half goes to another. Many of us have those. So what we're talking about is really a new capital campaign to support the arts in the school. And to do that kind of capital campaign, you have to have a vision and a plan. And if Ms. Schrank and other people on that Fine Arts Committee are capable of putting that together, I say God bless them, let's get behind them, and let's get to work.
I have one comment I'd like to add, too. And that is, I think the options that Lucy pointed out, which was either tax money or cutting, another option, I guess it's tax money also, is going to referendum. But given the way the state funding formula works, we lose money with the negative aid by going to referendum. And so to the extent our community can come up with ways that we can fund education that's outside of that funding formula, the Madison School District avoids the penalty of the negative aid, which is a substantial penalty. And so I really think, in a way, you can make your money work better, harder, and more directly for our community by coming up with alternative ways to do this outside of the state's formula. So I think that's an interesting thing for us to look at in the future.
I don't know much about long-term endowment, but I can speak to small-scale parental involvement really helping. I know we at West have 2 years in a row benefited from Hardin Coleman's organization to fund a low JV team at West. And I personally and many of my friends have directly benefited from that. I know that's slightly different from what you're talking about, but I just like to speak to you. It's not always we fund it or it gets cut. And I agree that any parental or community involvement should be welcome.
Okay, we have our next speaker, Nancy Webb.
Okay. Can you hear?
Yes.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I've been in Madison about 2 years. I'm speaking tonight as a special education advocate and parent, concerned very much about cost. I am a volunteer parent leader with Wisconsin FACETS, the Family Assistance Center for Education, Training, and Support. Before we moved here, I was a parent advocate for the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund in Berkeley, California. I am a member of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates. I have worked as a professional advocate for my own children and other people's children for 15 years. And in that time, much of my work as an advocate has been helping parents understand their rights under IDEA and their children's rights so as to avoid due process, which is costly, negative, debilitating to families and students and schools. I have in that time never, in one single instance ever, found a case where it was more costly to meet the child's educational needs than it was to litigate. Litigation is outrageously expensive. I don't know if you're aware that in our own case, we have repeatedly asked your district to mediate, settle, have a facilitated resolution session. They have steadfastly refused to do so. We don't know why. It's not worth the pride of not losing a hearing decision or I don't know. I do not know. I do not know why the district's first policy would not be to attempt resolution and settlement rather than proceed to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to attorneys. Hundreds of thousands of dollars that can be spent meeting children's needs. you can't offer to settle if you have no context in which to make an offer. When you're in due process, you must seek the maximum amount and your attorney's fees, otherwise you're not playing from a position of power. This is negative. I want to read you just a couple of things. I'm leaving you extensive information that I won't go into. I write for the Wisconsin State Journal. I've written about special education. This is something that I don't think you want to see written about. I think you want to solve it. I would urge you to please adopt a policy requiring your district to explore all possible mitigation and settlement before proceeding to due process. There's a pending action before the circuit court. We are appealing a decision. This, we have offered to mediate or settle. The district will not listen. I'm not saying it would resolve it. I'm saying they really should explore it. It's a waste of money not to. As taxpayers who are asked to support the schools with increased taxes, it's very difficult for my husband and I and for other parents in this situation to support giving money that we see squandered.
Thank you, Ms. Webb.
Thank you.
Did you have information you want to leave?
I do.
Okay. Maybe could you give that to Ann? Or you, oh, you've got it for us. Got copies. All right. Any questions?
Actually, our
comment.
Can we get some information from administration about this?
Well, I mean, I would think there's legal issues involved. We're talking about legal proceedings, and I don't know that we're going to want our attorneys to be talking to us about legal proceedings in an open meeting. So, I mean, if you'd like to hear about it in a later closed session meeting.
No, I just want to make sure that our legal staff is aware of this. Okay.
Okay, that concludes our public appearances. Announcements, there are no announcements. Our next item is the MMSD's Interscholastic Athletics Program.
Good evening. I've combined items 4 and 5 into one report. First part will be about athletics. The second part will be about extracurriculars, clubs, and activities. When we were asked as management team to report to you on various areas of interest, we wanted to present you with a broad overview. So I'm going to give you a sense of the level of participation by our students in athletics, the cost of it, and then the impact, not to the budget necessarily, but the impact on students and their families. Okay. In April of 2005, the district undertook a comprehensive study and came up with a set of recommendations regarding competitive athletics in the district. And at that point in time, the number of teams, the coaches, and essentially the number of athletes per team were very clearly defined. At this point in time, all of the formula budgets that are given to schools to support athletics are equal in all four high schools. The transportation and supervision dollars given to those schools for their transportation budget are equal. We know without a doubt, and this certainly buttresses the earlier conversation this evening, that booster clubs and parent support are absolutely critical to maintaining our competitive athletic program. Over time, fees for participation have increased, and we have added surcharges for some of the higher cost programs.
Pam, as you proceed, I guess just my expectation is we'll have a presentation for about 15 to 20 minutes, then with questions.
Correct.
Okay.
Those fees and surcharges over time basically have looked like this. If you look back to 2000-2001, we were charging $50 per sport. In 2005-06, That has increased to $115 per sport, with a $100 surcharge for golf, wrestling, and gymnastics, and a $400 surcharge for hockey, with a maximum of $500 per family. I thought you might be interested to note that, of course, fees are waived for families who cannot afford to pay those. And this was the breakdown in 2005-06 of how many fees were waived, which cost a total of $47,610.
I have a question on how the maximum works, for example, with hockey, where the sport, if it's $115 and you have the $400 adder.
The surcharge is above the the total per sport. I will be using this evening, too, numbers from 2005-06, because that gave us a complete season, a complete year on which to look at. At this point in time, obviously, we have winter sports left to complete, and then all of spring sports, so I couldn't give you a clear picture. Cost in relationship to the general budget, I think that's a question that people are always interested in. In 2005-06, the gross athletic budget was $2,083,603. Admissions, gate fees, and participation fees brought that total down to $1,433,603. This final cost is actually 0.54% of the total general fund budget for the entire district. I also did a breakdown for you of the cost per pupil per sport. And this is in descending order of expense. And this is prior to fees being subtracted from the cost. This is a gross number. But to give you a sense of, obviously, smaller numbers of participants equals greater cost sometimes. Yes, Lucy. Everything but we have fee, coaches' salaries are in there. For example, hockey rental, ice time is in there. Basically, all the costs are in there prior to subtracting the fees.
Supervision costs too.
How is field maintenance? How is supervision costs put in? Are they put in based upon per sport?
Per sport.
So ticket taker, supervision.
Right, because every sport has a very different number of supervisors.
But we don't have, what about gate receipts then? Is that?
That's different, very different as well.
Right, but that's not reflected.
That is not reflected.
This is gross, so that you know how much the sport actually costs per kid.
Okay, then the other question is, when I added up all the district costs on here, that did not equal... You said 2 million or whatever.
The 2 million.
It did not equal that.
It does not include athletic directors.
It does not include athletic directors.
Okay, and what about
the formula
budgets?
Does
it?
Yes, formula does.
Okay.
The first slide was boys' sports, and now we get into girls' sports. Again, ascending or descending order of costs. This, again, from 2005-06, participation numbers, total numbers. Obviously, fall sports are our largest. Winter is much, much smaller. And then the spring gets back up to a larger number of participants. I wanted to allude to transportation because that's something we've talked about over time. Currently, not all students are transported to all games or to all practices. Over time, we have had to increasingly rely upon parents and sometimes upon students to drive themselves. The basic transportation costs when we do bus have increased fairly dramatically because of fuel costs, and the decline in overall budgets for our schools have really forced our athletic directors to reduce items like new uniforms or equipment repair or replacement to shore up transportation costs. Yes?
Are the transportation costs included in the cost per student?
Yes, they are. I just wanted to give you a brief overview on how athletics are administered in the district. The contract that we operate under does require that if a school has an athletic director, that athletic director do that job full-time, that it cannot be combined with teaching, for example. But the contract does not require that a school has to have an athletic director. However, each high school currently does have a full-time athletic director and one full-time athletic secretary. And then there is one central clerical position here at Doyle that manages district schedules, officials, which is a huge part of the job, and budgets.
The secretaries and the athletic secretaries and the person, central person in Doyle, that those people are also in the athletic budget?
The director and the secretary are not. They're out in the formula budget.
They're in the $2.3 million.
They're in the $2.3 million.
Right.
Okay. So when we, all right.
But not on the per. There would not be.
In the per sport.
Not on the per.
Across the per sport.
So when we're looking at the difference between the per sport cost and the total cost, you have to add not just the athletic directors, but also the athletic secretary and the central office person.
Correct. And just as a comparison, obviously we belong to the Big Eight conference, which is about to have 10 schools in it. And we have, there's a combination across those schools of either full-time athletic directors or in some cases assistant principals that have athletics as part of their assignment, and they do an athletic director's job. The impact on students and their families, very, very strong correlation between participating in athletics and feeling a stronger connection to school. There's numbers of studies out there. I didn't cite any specific one, but rather summarized that kids who do participate have better attendance, do more homework, earn more credits, and do better on standardized tests than do non-participants. A survey of executives in Fortune 500 companies found that 95% of those executives had participated in sports in high school. So it's a definite training ground for leadership and a training ground also for teamwork. And because of that teamwork and the discipline that sports requires, student athletes do exhibit very positive, responsible social behaviors. School spirit is something very alive and well, and it lives through athletics. We talk often about the distinct personalities of our four high schools, and much of that swirls around athletics and participation in not only playing, but also in being part of the audience and being an observer and a participant that way. I remember numbers of conversations that I had with families when I was a principal who indicated to me that when they heard conversations about comfort level in schools, do you feel comfortable coming into school? Do you, how do you feel about your school? All families that I talked to indicated that attending games, attending events were times in which it literally was a level playing field. Everybody felt part of whatever was going on, very different perhaps from coming into some other kinds of meetings or what have you. So it's got a strong, strong impact on our kids and on our families. I did want to add the MSCR non-competitive sports information, because many of our students who could not participate in our competitive WIAA athletics are getting a wonderful experience through MSCR. We began this program last year, very small, and it's just absolutely grown by leaps and bounds. For example, right now we have 20 boys basketball teams participating. We expanded now beyond boys and girls basketball into volleyball, co-ed volleyball, boys soccer, boys basketball 9-10, and boys basketball 11-12, which, I might add, includes a team of 8 girls. Not enough girls went out to do a full league, but they're playing with the boys. And the cost of supporting these teams is, as you see there, $112,306. And we've got 363 kids participating, and 37% of those are free and reduced lunch. Lori?
I have a question just on the 112. Is that a net figure or a gross figure?
112,000. Oh. Good. I would bet that. I don't know, and I'll find out for you. I got these from MSCR. So there's a tiny fee. It's like $5. Yeah. But I'll certainly find that for you.
So, and that cost is for administration? Because the coaches are unpaid for the teams.
Right.
There is MSCR staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I recall, there's one staff member on each side of town who actually manages this program and some other high school things with it. So
right.
I think it's their expense, I believe.
Is that expense then for just the sports part of those people's
Just the
jobs?
Sports part. I asked her to break that out.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to make a point of information to see that you have cheerleading listed under girls' sports, and I'd be remiss if I didn't note that, at least at East, it's a co-ed sport.
Thank you.
Believe me.
More than thank you, then. I don't have any recommendations. I wanted to call them considerations. The things that we may want to look at as we go through the budgeting process, and that is refiguring athletic director positions, modifying fees for high-cost sports, or eliminating high-cost sports. So those are just some areas that we may want to take a look at. Moving on to clubs and activities, same basic format. I wanted you to be aware of the fact that under the contract, there are specific positions, coaching positions, director positions that are paid under the contract. And they are paid in a range of 4% to 10% on the base salary. And that depends a lot on, for example, the drama position, numbers of productions, three or more is the top paid, and then they go down from there. And level of time in the position also factors in. But these are the ones that we contractually are obligated for. Yes?
At some point, would it be possible to get a breakdown of which schools have which positions? Because I'm seeing things on there that I'm sure we don't have.
Sure.
And I'm just curious to know sort of, hello.
Hello.
Never mind.
Perhaps there. No, that's fine. I can also do it more definitively than this chart. Every school, not unlike athletics, receives the same amount out of the budget. You get $28,293. Obviously, as you look at these figures, it's very, very clear that the schools are supplementing in a number of ways, mostly through fundraisers, to enable this level of expenditure to go on. I do have a note at the bottom, it's very important, that if you take yearbook out, which in all cases, in all schools, is totally self-sustaining, then the cost of extracurriculars drops considerably.
Go ahead. So would that suggest, going back to that last one, that if we took the $28,293 and multiplied that by 4, that would be the district contribution, and when you look at the costs down at the bottom,
would probably mean that the schools are supplementing about $20,000.
Correct.
And we don't know how necessarily.
No, but we do know it's external.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. And middle schools, a very much smaller version of what you just saw. Much of the middle school club and activity work is done through MSCR, and I'll show you that in a moment. But the same thing holds here as well. If your book is removed, the cost is very, very small. Participation is a real, this is not by any stretch of the imagination a complete accounting. Our new infinite campus system doesn't really allow us to put what used to be a tag or a flag on a student. Instead, we have to create almost class lists and mass add participants. So this is not complete. Schools are just starting. East has done a phenomenal job of getting their numbers in. And we will, over time, obviously get this updated. But even with a lack of reporting in some instances, you can see that when all the numbers are in, I think we're going to see almost everyone looking exactly like East with a high, high level of participation. Numbers of these clubs, by the way, are run by people who obviously are not paid contractually. They're doing it out of a love of kids or love of the activity.
Yeah, that was my question. Is it fair, when you look at that list of clubs, that anyone that doesn't have a corresponding collective bargained agreement, they're
doing voluntary.
It
voluntary? Yes.
And then they actually say there's some clubs in there that are just not, the chess club, math,
right. Yeah, this is the current official list on Infinite Campus, but as you can see from this, past and coming attractions, there are hundreds of things that aren't listed. West, for example, during its one lunch, is running over 100 clubs and activities during that lunchtime. Memorial's got a number here. East, we've just scratched the surface. I wanted to show you the range of East drama productions, for example. There are many schools have, if you look all the way down there to the Memorial Seinfeld Viewing Society, many schools have things very much like that, very unique to either a time period or, again, a particular group of kids' interests. So there's a broad, broad range of things, all of which provide an opportunity for kids to stay connected to school. The impact on kids and families, just exactly like athletics, those kids who participate really are more connected, feel more strongly about school and school's value to themselves, definitely fewer discipline problems for kids who do participate. On surveys, students who participate express a greater satisfaction with the overall high school experience than students who are not involved for whatever reason. I thought this was absolutely fascinating that both ACT and SAT report that activity participation is a stronger indicator of career success and eventual community involvement than grades or test scores. And that's reported out on the survey portion of the ACT or the SAT. The MSCR after-school programming, this is where MSCR shines in the middle schools. All 11 middle schools have after-school clubs. They're running resource centers at nine of the 11. And those resource centers do tutoring, do homework. Nine middle schools offer after-school snacks hooked up with the resource center. They are running over 100 different types of clubs, the same kind of wide, wide range for kids. And they also, in addition, do citywide activities that join middle school to middle school, which include a drill and dance team festival, a citywide chess tournament, and citywide field trips. The participation is astonishing. 83% of the total middle school population is currently involved in MSCR after school activities or clubs. And 42% of those students were free and reduced lunch kids. And here's the breakdown of the attendees.
Can I ask a question about those numbers? When you're figuring out the number of kids that are participating, if you've got three different clubs and the same kid goes to three different clubs, is that one child counted three times?
According to Julie Kanke, this is an unduplicated count. So it's individual children. The Fund 80 support for the clubs and the youth sports that they do run is broken down in the following way. That's the cost to middle schools that is borne by MSCR through Fund 80. And
just one comment. The youth resource centers are also funded jointly. United Way provides funds. I think in some of them the county provides funds. There are other funders. This is just our share of what those are.
Correct. MSCR is also doing some high school clubs. They're just beginning in that arena. All of the schools and Shabazz and the affiliated alternatives do have MSCR-sponsored clubs. And examples for these include Latin dance, video production, hip-hop 101, music management, cooking, bowling, and skiing. And the total club participation here is 589 students. That's across the city. But they are meeting a need and providing clubs that schools were not able to, where there was high student interest, but the school wasn't necessarily able to find an advisor. But MSCR stepped up for that. The sports that are provided through MSCR that take place essentially after school as well are listed there. And this is a way for middle school kids to be involved in athletics, to begin to continue to hone their skills for eventual participation at the high school level. And this was something that was sorely lacking until a couple of years ago when this program was put into place. And I have no specific considerations for you regarding activities and clubs.
Can we get the lights up?
Lights.
Okay, questions for Pam? Arlene? Oh, Carol, I'm sorry.
So the total cost to the operating budget, excluding Fund 80, for extracurriculars and sports is a little over $2 million.
Correct.
And the net cost is about
$1.5 million.
Arlene?
Gate receipts. Do those go to the specific schools or does that come back in?
It goes to the general fund.
And then I have one more question. So I just got asked this by a parent yesterday. A parent from West was wondering how the decision is made as to whether a high school has a specific sport. Apparently that competitive skiing or ski racing is available as a sport at three of the four high schools, but not at West.
I think it's available as a club.
It's a club. It is not an official interscholastic sport.
Right. So the sports are the same?
Yes.
At all
four high schools.
Yes, they are.
Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. Yeah. One of these is for you, Roger. When we have the cost at $2 million, how does that compare? I mean, I noticed that it's different than the people's budget where we have it at about 1.7.
Again, every time we transition from the report to do it by the department or accounting method to the people's budget, and you go back to it and look at the matrix, figure out what's in there, I could do that for you and reconcile it.
Okay. So that's just something that I'd like looked at and reconciled. Okay. I think it would be very useful to do a net cost per sport. I mean, I don't really think it's fair to look at the sports just by gross cost and then just by gross cost because and bringing in gate receipts and supervision. I mean, supervision costs would already be in here, but meanwhile, the people that they're supervising and all the revenue that's generated from that is not. So I think to give us a fair comparison, we really need that.
Okay.
And I guess how long would it take? How difficult is it to do that?
It wouldn't be that long.
Okay.
Or that difficult.
Oh, good. I'd like to hear that. Lucy?
Would you include, would you back fees out of that too?
I would allocate the fees, right? Yeah. I don't know how you're going to handle where you have like a limit on the family cap, how you allocate that.
I think we'd just back out the fees for that sport, not what the total fees were for that sport.
Just as they were accounted.
Yeah.
Okay. Lucy?
I guess I have a question about the athletic costs at the high schools. Because when I look at the extracurriculars and I see that some of the schools are supplementing, I wonder how the athletic budgets and sports would compare across high schools if we had a similar matrix. Yeah. And
we tried last year to get a handle, so to speak, on parent donations. Certainly we started to do a pretty good picture of booster club donations. Over time, and we could certainly do that. I think there are a lot of individual kinds of things that go on that we may not even be aware of, but we could certainly do a larger booster club figure.
Yeah, I'm confident that there are lots of individual
there's no question
parent-to-kid things that happen. And between parents and kids who may not have the resources to participate, there's a lot of generosity going on.
A tremendous amount.
But what I'm thinking more is when we look at what the expenditures are and the participation rates are for the schools, how do they compare? And it may be that there is nothing, and it may be that it's a really interesting way to look at it.
Okay. We'll take a look at it.
I don't have anything particular in mind. I'm just curious.
Yeah, we'll see what we find.
Colleen?
In your considerations when you talk about high-cost sports, I'm assuming you're talking about the cost per student, not the total cost of district cost of a sport.
Cost per student.
Was that wanting to say something or
yeah,
not?
I kind of do. Are you interested in seeing how this the program worked with girls' ice hockey at all, and how they're generating donations and things like that. I mean, I was able to attend their last function or their last game, I should say, that they did win, and they're playing right now for a regional championship or something like that. But obviously that's supported strictly by the parents and some business donations. So is that something that the committee would be interested in at least looking at, because obviously as we go forward, that may be a model that may need to be looked at for a lot of different sports or a lot of different extracurricular activities. And I just want to see if that's something we'd be interested in. Or
I guess at this point, what I'd like to see us is kind of gather the base information and then consider all the types of alternatives that are out there. And I think, for example, Ms. Schrenk's comment on in the public appearances, it really fits with that. What type of alternative funding is sources are there, but I'd like to look at that a little bit more globally. And until you get some of that base information, I think it's difficult for people to do that. So when you really know what it costs per sport, per student, depending on sports and that kind of thing, and I don't know, maybe even per school would be useful to find out. You may not like what you find out, but on the other hand, it's good to know.
So when you're ready for solutions, then go to that.
Then I'll come to you, okay, Jen, for the solutions.
No, go to Girls Ice Hockey.
Oh,
right. Essence House.
Well, I think one of the reasons I'm curious about is when I look at some of the expenditures, and I'm sure that many of my friends and fellow parents would be delighted to spend more money if it was available. But I'm thinking, East is sort of a cheap date, and what I'm curious about is how do people achieve a lot with little.
Yes.
I'm interested in how what people are able to accomplish with limited resources, as I am with who gets what.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think, though, that you may find out that participation is higher at certain schools than other schools, so that on a per-student basis, it actually may be cheaper at Memorial than it is at East. So, I mean, I think partly gathering the information is to let us know whether some of our assumptions are correct or not correct.
And, sure.
I would also like to have information about the extracurriculars. I mean, when we see that we only give...
Yes, that small amount.
That small amount. Now, does that include the salaries, though?
Yeah.
That is the salaries for the positions that are...
Yes. Isn't it? The 28,000? You don't think so? No?
That's not salaries for the, not for the contractual. It covers the, that wouldn't be included, the supervisory of the gift of judges or anything like that.
Right.
But it doesn't include the coaches.
The coaches themselves.
Okay. So then we would need numbers.
We could very easily do a breakdown by school.
Well, and I think then also giving the participation number and then the cost for activity per student. I think it's useful to compare that.
Okay.
So that essentially our information will look similar to that. So that's for the extracurriculars. And then I would also like to see something similar for the MSCR high school participation in the sports. Well, and the extracurriculars. How does that compare? I mean, when I just did the 112,000 divided by the number of kids participating, that was about $300 and some per child. I want to get comparable information for all our different programs.
That's another question, Ms. Cutler.
Yes.
Just another thing. I thought last year you did, you modified the athletics budget because some schools had their own practice facilities where other schools didn't.
The transportation study looked really at, came up with the conclusion that if we were to do this right, we would transport everyone to everything, practices included. In talking with the athletic directors who directly manage the transportation costs, they did not feel strongly about trying to sort of prorate that kind of thing. And it's probably what we are beginning to run into are some maintenance issues across the city fields. And, in fact, some of the schools that traditionally have had a place to practice that's close are going to even have more travel involved. So at this point in time, it was an equal amount.
All right. Thank you.
Lucy?
A related question that came up was why in the past the transportation budgets have been the same regardless of whether teams need to travel for their home games. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean Memorial and La Follette have football stadiums immediately adjacent to their buildings, west and east don't, mm-hmm. but the transportation budgets are identical, mm-hmm. and I still don't understand why we would do it that way. It's not like we're putting the football players in the bus to get them from the locker room to the field.
No, we are not. Definitely not. And sometimes the schedules, depending upon numbers of home games versus numbers of away games, shifts that a little bit. My only answer, and it's not necessarily a good one, is that it's been done that way and the athletic directors were comfortable with it remaining.
One, I guess, broad question I'd like answered is that we fund some extracurricular activities with Fund 80 and others not. How is that line drawn?
We don't fund any extracurricular activities with Fund 80.
Then use the right terminology for me.
We fund clubs and after-school programs that are open to the community at large through Fund 80. The sports as a middle school club can be funded through Fund 80. Extracurriculars are specifically identified as not being able to be funded because it involves the continued participation of students. They're in the district. It's restricted to only district students and is not there eligible for funding.
Our middle school sports program, for example, that MSCR runs, is open to private school students and mm-hmm. anybody else who lives inside the school district who is that age and wants to play. And I believe there are some private school students who do play.
Yes. And what about some of the other high school extracurricular things that we offer? What about WIAA sports? I think I understand the answer, but I would like you to say what the answer is and why it is.
The answer is because it's restricted to the daytime, and I can go to the DPI website. It specifically excludes in their guidelines use of payment of extracurricular activities out of Fund 80. That's one of the few specific guidelines that are there for the accounting of expenditures, but that is very, very, sticks out as a very specific direction.
And what about drama programs or certain other clubs that we have on our list?
It really
list.
Boils down to then whether or not there's a correct connection to the curricular activity during the course of the day. Some of the drama programs are an outgrowth of a curricular program or a mm-hmm. class during the day. If there's any sort of tie at all, they're not eligible to enroll. If we have those activities, I think we're seeing that more in some of the things that are unique, that are not been offered, do not have a connection, do not have a paid coach. Mm-hmm. Those things are easy to fold into our high school program. And I think you'll see a growth in that area over the next year or two.
Our MSCR clubs, the coaches, I thought you said skiing and bowling. Are there coaches with that, and are they paid? How does that work?
Yes, I believe they are. They'll be through the MSCR program.
Okay.
Going back to WIA sport, athletics, I gather that because we've had in the past gymnastics and now girls hockey that is supported by non-district funds, that doesn't create any problem for their participation.
That's correct. It does not. Okay. The money is donated to us. The program is still administered by the district, so they're district managed, they're district run. The resources are coming from an alternative.
Okay, and that's the key.
Yes.
Okay. Lucy?
So, for example, with the type of proposal or commentary that we had from Ms. Schrenk earlier, if there was a private organization that was, in fact, raising money to support the fine arts in the Madison District, we could, in fact, use those resources if those resources went through district administration and the program was administered by the jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Do we look at combining teams? I know, for example, gymnastics.
Yes, we do.
And how is that decision made?
You have to apply to the WIAA for a waiver.
Right, but I mean, how does, from the district's perspective, do you look at it and say the participation is too low in schools
exactly,
and we need to combine?
That's exactly it.
Is that something that happens at the district level? Does it happen at the per school level?
The athletic directors meet as a body once a month. And those kinds of concerns are brought to that group for a general discussion. It's always around low participation, one versus another, and wanting to combine to allow students to continue to participate. So we've always certainly supported that kind of combination.
So when you give us the numbers on the schools, it'll have the per school participation in the individual sports?
In the individual sport.
Okay. Any other questions on the presentation on athletics and extracurricular programs? Lucy?
I'd just like to thank you for the amount of work that is going into putting all of this together. I know that it is amazing the amount of work that goes on in clubs and supervision and advising within the schools' programs, and then you add on the complexity of the concurrent MSCR programs, and that's a lot of work. So thank you for helping put that together.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, our next item is the citizens' budget, and before the meeting, Roger had provided me an update, so I'm going to pass that around to everybody and let him tell us what this is.
I'll wait till everybody gets that. Not. Went back through the minutes and the information that was fed back to us from the workshop and the committee meeting with the citizen input, and a couple of the things jumped out that were very obvious and that we felt we needed to address. And I've done that on this format. There are some other things that the committee or the board may want us to look at or further evaluate. And then also some of the next steps that we've talked about is the annotations and trying to define each of the areas. Just as, asking the question, what is in athletics, we need to have that breakdown so there is that definition of each of those areas. But what we did is I took, if you remember the previous editions of this, in-school operations, we had a line item that was for fringe benefits. And it was strongly suggested through our discussions that just kind of stuck out. It didn't mean anything. And although we didn't have a way through our reporting process to combine it, if we dumped this into an Excel spreadsheet and apply a formula to it, we have taken and distributed those fringe benefits across the salary areas. It's not a scientific method except for the fact that it used a formula. But I didn't differentiate between how much fringes would be in place for teachers versus social workers versus librarians versus custodians. I just prorated if that part of salaries made up, 2% of the whole salary that was up there, I distributed 2% of the fringes to that category. And so we've done that and distributed those costs across all of number one. Secondly, second item that jumped out was to give subtotals by the areas. We've included that. And then the third area that was pretty consistent from the four different groups was percentage totals. Very much interested in knowing what percentage of the total budget is each of these line items. So I know there could be more. There could be some adjustments we could make in the format, but we did take the step to include those three items.
So what I would like us to do as a committee is take this and go back and look at the comments that we had at the meetings and what other changes we'd like on this. In addition, one of the big comments we got at the meeting, at the public input meeting, was that it would be very helpful to have footnotes or annotations related to the different categories and what's included within those numbers. And so that is something I would like to ask the administration to do kind of as their task while the board members are looking at this document, that you start the work of putting together those annotations.
We can do that.
Carol?
Just one small thing that I think might be helpful, and that is to do a percentage on the subtotals.
I played with it and had it there, took them off, and I can put them back on very
easily. Yeah, I think that people want to see that. And actually, at some point, it would make sense to me to change our numbering kind of thing. I would go to A, B, C, and then Arabic numbers for all of the line items, just because I think people find that a little easier to track.
Yeah, I don't think we should at all be wedded to this particular layout.
Right, okay.
I mean, that was one of the things we heard, is that people didn't necessarily find this layout really easy to read. So whatever ideas you have on how to make this more readable, okay. I think that's what we'd want to see.
And the other thing that I recall from the comments were questions about sources of funds, and I think we need to figure out how we want to portray that.
Yeah, and I did look at that and did pick that up, and that one, we can continue to have the discussion of how we do that, what we can identify by area and which we can't, and whether or not we just distribute, take the tax levy and distribute it across on a percentage basis.
Yeah, and I guess I would be comfortable with just doing the broad categories of, taking the whole budget, this is how much we get from each of the major sources.
One of the considerations, one of the ground rules that we'd moved into this was that we would have a report that we could generate from our system.
Right.
We have gone beyond that. This is not a report that we'll be able to generate from our system. We will need to generate reports to input into a spreadsheet and to manipulate it every time that we do this report. So, that's a fact of life that we'll accept.
I mean, I would like to kind of get a discrete task and get it back and get that worked out with the footnotes, the annotations first, and then we work on the revenue as the next thing after that. Joe?
I don't know. Just a little thing, as I read this, I would love to be able to see for the in-school operations, since it has these categories of teachers and support staff, I would love to be able to see the totals for each of those categories, too. There's the center column that has the totals.
A sub.
Oh, you're talking about of the numbers?
For example, the total funds for teachers.
Okay.
I don't take that into consideration.
Okay, any other comments on citizens' budget? Thank you very much. The next item is the issuance of bonds approved as part of the November 7, 2006 referendum.
We're coming up on the time that we would actually be borrowing the money that was authorized by the November referendum, which includes the financing for the new school on Linden Park, includes the financing for the Leopold addition and remodeling, and includes the refinancing of some trust fund loans that were specifically authorized in the referendum. In looking at our total debt, our financial advisor, Paul Thompson, has come back to us and advised us that it would be a good time to refinance the 1991 and 1992 bonds. And so what we put together through his guidance and advice, a package that includes both the refinancing and the authorization from the referendum. So what we, moving forward, if there's no objection, and we can, obviously come back and answer any questions you have on this, moving forward, we would be going out for bids for bonding at $30,365,000 as, again, both parts of that. The advantages of the refinancing piece are, at this time, there would be a savings of $532,000 over the next few years, just a very short period of time, for that financing. We think that impacted on the taxpayer substantial, and that's why we included it in this package.
Good. Roger, it did not increase the length of the bonds, right?
It does not increase the length of the bonds. It's the same term and does have an impact, that impact on
just
the
just a better interest rate.
Yeah.
Carol?
Okay, and that has to go back to the taxpayer, as a cut in taxes for that particular.
It's a specific levy. It would be changing the authorized levy that would be taking forward. It was not usable for any other purpose. It's just a tax that we won't have to make.
Okay.
In our forecast, then, for our budget, were we projecting some type of debt that now is less under that?
The forecast that we used in the budget in January only included Fund 10 and 27. We didn't include what would, in essence, becomes Fund 30 obligations, and that's what these are all involved.
Okay.
It did include moving out the trust fund loans that were authorized to move out from the referendum. We did include that move out of those.
And any other questions about the bonds? Then the issuance of it, once you get the proposals that will come back to the full board.
It's scheduled right now to, I believe we're going on sale, accepting bids on March 5th. We'll come that night back to the board for approval with our hope to close on by the 15th of March. So okay. It's proceeding through the process. No action required tonight, but we felt, you know, if you had questions and get this information in the hands of the board. So in particular, as you see that total amount of $30 million, that is being more than what we'd had authorized in the referendum.
Okay, and we had added one other item to our agenda previously, right? I believe that came out in time.
On Friday.
And that is a report on the governor's budget and, I guess, how that affects MMSD.
I can walk through, and Joe and I worked closely together to go through and try to get out as much as we could from a document that oftentimes doesn't have specifics. And then Joe has also done a number of follow-ups to say what's included, what's not included in a particular line item. In the analysis we put together, we went through the specific items as they reacted to the DPI budget and as were included or not included by the governor in his proposal to the legislature. A couple things that I would hit on as highlights that affect the district. One is there's been a lot of talk about two-thirds funding as being a major part of what's included in the budget. And as best we can see, that's true. But that has no impact or no effect on our revenue limit authority. And so it's we caution that adding money to state aid doesn't help us with our $10.5 million deficit.
Maintaining two-thirds funding is actually a property tax relief measure, which is property tax on which we applaud, but it is actually a property tax measure, not a measure that changes the revenue cap. So,
a couple other items that have, you know, if approved and included in the final state budget, would have positive impacts. The increase in special education categorical aid from what we had projected in our forecast to what would be included would be a little over $1 million for next year, and then an additional $1.7 million the year after that. The addition of $250 per student on SAGE would increase our revenues by about $737,000 over what we had projected in the past. Again, that's to qualify that's based upon our current number of students involved with SAGE that are under contracts. And if there's shifts in that, obviously that number could change slightly. Actually, Frank Kelly had the most excitement because getting money from the state to take them and fully fund a program that's been out there by itself for a number of years. And it's any little bit we can get in food services helpful, but $31,000 plus $12,000 in additional money would be welcome in that area. Bilingual, holding that at 12%, we're currently at 11.49%. And it has a minimal, but does have an impact of about $50,000. And then the other larger item that was included that will have an impact, but we're really trying to figure out what it means, is the school safety exemption, and whether or not that requires, as we read it in the materials, a matching by your local law enforcement agency, or whether or not there will be some wait for us to access those dollars for not only salaries but equipment and other things without having that matching. That's going to take some time to sort out, and I think even the Legislative Fiscal Bureau is going to have some time to figure that one out. Joe, you want to come in?
I think as you look at the array of items in the governor's budget, I believe the things that Roger highlighted really are probably the key ones for us. In regard to Roger's last comments about security measures, I have had discussions with other lobbyists in the education community, and I think there's pretty much consensus among school boards, school administrators, and teachers that the proposal on little revenue limit flexibility on security is probably not what we were hoping for, and I think there will be unified efforts to expand that language to something that probably looks more similar to what Representative Black had proposed. The governor's language is very narrow, specifically to educational resource officers in high schools. And it really doesn't give any mention at all to middle schools or elementary schools. And as I said, I think there will be consensus, and we'll work together, Milwaukee and Janesville and Madison and the other education groups, to put a little more meat into the governor's original proposal.
One of the major things, too, is the security item as proposed by the governor requires a match by the local police department in terms of money. So that would be something to have to be worked out with them, and knowing they're not overrun with budget either. So, but we will be talking with them about that. And there are some in-kind things that we do together that possibly have some potential, too. So.
Before, if you don't mind, just a couple little comments. There are some things that do not help or impact directly on the budget, but a couple of things that I would like to, you know, just add and comment on. One is the recognition of the revenues that are being provided to the districts for library aid or the Common School Fund. And as I pointed out, or we pointed out in the materials that we sent you, flexibility in the use of those would be a great help to us, and we're finding it a challenge to disperse and actually put that amount of money into software that only can be in the libraries and library books that can only be in the libraries. And we've been working with the Department of Public Instruction to see if there's a way to change that interpretation of that particular statute. Another major one, you know, is the elimination of QEO and the repeal of the authority, although the general consensus is that it probably won't have an impact on negotiations per se. I think moving to arbitration where the QEO or the 3.8% is not a weighted factor, nor is local economic conditions a weighted factor, and putting those back on the same level of any other factors related to negotiations, related to arbitration, is a major change in the philosophy of the state and would have long-term impact on schools.
Would have long-term major impact, I believe, on arbitrations with teachers, not positive to school boards. One other comment that I might make, and then we can move on. The only thing right now that we have calculated as we're working on the budget, the only thing that we are at this point in time including is the SAGE money. We're not including any of the other things here until we see further down the line where we are.
So, and I guess that was really where I wanted to go with, to get to that question. So as far as the special education categorical aid, we think that that's not, we're uncomfortable.
My instincts tell me that will hold. I've, in discussions with members of both sides of the aisle, they recognize that special education expenses are pretty much universal, that districts are grappling with that, suburban, urban, rural. I would be surprised if that money is decreased. There might be efforts to get back up to the $70 million that Superintendent Burmaster had recommended in her budget proposal. This is 56, I think, over the biennium.
I guess that is the question. We had our presentation on the forecast, which showed $10.5 million of cuts from the same service, and I guess I would like to get some sense from the administration on what you're going to be putting before us, which I think is early March, on budget cuts, and does this reduce that $10.5 million somewhat? It sounds like certainly the SAGE funding, the $737,000.
The SAGE funding, clearly, we had intended to include because there had been a lot of conversations leading up to the governor's budget, which made that one pretty much a done deal. What we have talked about doing within the management team is we'll prepare our list, not including any other revenues, but we will prioritize those things that we would recommend to add back in if those revenues would become a reality. And so you will receive that, you know, that kind of a double list, you know, under the governor's budget and under what we know under current legislation.
And I think as we move forward and we hear the discussion, actually within the legislature, we may be more comfortable with where, the thing we were most comfortable with was SAGE, which is where we're
at. I mean, I guess I would encourage us to be comfortable with whatever revenue projections we have. On the other hand, I don't want us to be overly pessimistic either and put our community through additional pain if that's not going to be likely to happen. But
we would like to not.
Yes, I know. I wasn't suggesting you wanted to. Another item, I guess, that you had mentioned before in board officers' meeting has to do with the projections that we had. The forecast included nothing for salary savings, which historically just, I mean, we have a high number in there right now, I think, which is almost 5.9 million or something. But
we are including a million. Our proposal will include $1 million worth of salary savings, which we believe we can clearly document, and we feel very safe and conservative in putting in.
And so by putting that in, that means then $1 million less.
That's 9.5.
Right, that's correct.
Of fewer cuts.
Yes.
That's correct.
I mean, I would like to get something from the administration saying, okay, now we're looking at what number for cuts. You know, we've been using the 10.5 million, and if that's getting reduced, I would like to.
Well, the process that we're involved right now is we had the forecast, and then we kind of formalized where we're thinking of the general areas as a management team where we would recommend cutting the budget to balance. We've taken actually a step back and are building the cost to continue budget right now, and that will give us the updated bottom line, and that's probably the end of this week, early next week, is we'll be able to say that it's not 10.5. It's, you know, it's 9.2 because of this, because of this, because of this. In building the cost continuing budget, some of it's pluses and some of it's minuses. Utilities, you know, we're looking at it school by school. We're looking at transportation contracts. We're updating the supply of materials and equipment on a needs basis, and some of them go down and some of them go up. And that's the process we're involved with right now. We're also re-looking at all those revenue line items that we had forecast on. Is there something else we know right now that would change that? And just as last year we had talked about I think it was a $9.8 million budget cut. I mean, we came in our actual going from cost to continue to balance budget was like $6.8 million. And so we're in that phase of building cost to continue right now. And I think early next week we could give you an idea of what that number will be.
And understanding that there's two things that happen as we go forward. Let me give you an example. If our workers' comp premium is going down, but we're maintaining the same level of benefit that's going down because of our experience, that's a change to cost to continue. The forecast presumes that it stayed just the same. That's a change to cost to continue. So that would reduce the 10.5 million in and of itself, but it's reduced in the cost to continue budget. But actual budget cuts we provide you will be budget cuts that are actually a change in service. And so hopefully by the middle of next week, we'll be able to say, here's the actual target that we're working with, which would include taking out the cost to continue stuff that changes and what we're working with based on the SAGE money we put in and those kinds of things.
Okay. Any other questions about that and that process? Or all right.
Ms. Cubs, just real quickly. The document that you were working from before in terms of the debt service, I believe, and it was about $500,000, that would not affect this budget at all?
No. It's over the next 4 years in the refinancing, and that's against debt service, which is outside of revenue limits.
It has to be returned to the taxpayer.
It has to be returned to the taxpayer.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Our next item, other business. There is no other business, and I take a motion to adjourn.
So, second.
All's in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Yeah.